The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to my afternoon show on this Saturday, September 22nd, 2012, coming to you live from the White Network. I'm Carolyn Yeager, your host for the next 2 hours. Before I introduce my wonderful guest for today, I want to thank some people, starting with Bruno, who sent a cash donation to the White Network via snail mail. No return address and no email address, so I can't write to thank him. But I wanted him to know that it got to our post office box safely and is much appreciated. So thank you, Bruno. I also want to give thanks, since I'm at it, to Paul, John, Carl, and Dimitar, who sent money this month and are such faithful supporters of my work, even though I do also write to them. And now I'm very pleased to bring you a new voice. At least it's new. She's new to me, and she's probably new to a lot of you, but maybe not all of you. A fresh voice, a strong voice, that has appeared in our movement in the form of videos by Orwell's daughter. The genius behind these videos is Marina Orwell, a professional woman who woke up, got mad, and started doing something about it. So, hello, Marina. Big welcome to you.
Hi. Thank you.
All right. Well, I just love to have new and interesting people to interview on this show. It's just, you know, I'm always searching, and I'm very happy to have met you, and I'm glad that you were able to come on today. You've had some computer problems and so on, but still it's working out all right. So, to just start out, I already gave a little bit of my own opinion of you, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself in whatever way you want to do that. I know everyone will be interested.
Well, I guess I could tell about myself just on how, you know, I came to this, and because that's the important part, I think. But I want to start at close to the end of that story, because I don't want to get sidetracked and forget, because when we talked before, I don't think I emphasize this enough. I began becoming pro-white, and I guess you could say like Jew-wise, by researching like a scientist. I mean, I didn't set out to find the things that I found, but I found them nonetheless. And I kept finding them over and over again. But anyway, after I had acquired a lot of knowledge on these topics, there came up for me a question of conscience, and, you know, that like taking a leap from knowing to doing. And, that leap, was in no small part due to you and, you know, other people as well at Reason Radio. Listening, but especially to you, and maybe it's a female thing, hearing another female speak out and be strong. And, so anyway, I mean, hearing you confirmed the things that I'd learned on my own, but you also serve as an example of how white people should be behaving, in my opinion. You know, speaking out clearly, honestly, with strength and without hedging.
Well, thank you very much for that. Let me just interject that. That's very nice. I'm pleased to hear
but
that.
But also, I'm not quite finished with you yet.
Okay.
I also have to say that that I got quite an emotional push from hearing your readings from the fire, which just made me weep. Many times, had to get up and go to the other room and cry. I mean, to me, anybody who could read or listen or otherwise learn about the real Holocaust that happened in Germany and elsewhere, the useless loss of millions of mostly men in the military, the real Holocaust of tens of millions of white people by the mainly Jewish Bolsheviks. Anybody that could learn about these things, to me, you must somewhere have a pang of conscience. And for me, I feel like I owe it to my ancestors to tell their stories and their suppressed stories. You know, this is just a grave injustice and suffering that has gone on. And anyway, that's enough of my.
Well, that's great. I'm so pleased to hear you say that about the fire, because I certainly did want to wake people up. That's why I kept doing it for several months every Monday night. For the first half hour, I certainly wanted to wake people up and make them aware. And I did get messages from some other people. And one was this a British woman I told you about, who said the same thing you just did. It made her weep. It really affected her. So that's very, very gratifying to me. Thanks.
Yeah. And you don't read, I might be tempted to read something like that with a lot of emotion, or I would really have to get myself, in a certain state to not. And you just read it matter-of-factly, and it was written matter-of-factly, and it was, you know, just very powerful. So anyway, that's kind of close to the end of the story. But I could start at the beginning of how I came to this. And I should say that, you know, when I was, from the time I was a kid, I'd really given up on the political system because I could see that it was just what I call the football team mentality. And actually, I mean, that's very apropos, because just like football teams that these idiots actually cheer for, these are just people making lots of money. They don't care if they're in Milwaukee or Philadelphia or what. They go where the money is. And it's pretty much the same with our political system, this stupid Democrat Republican crap. Well, anyway, I had seen through it as a kid, and I dropped out. I mean, I wasn't interested, and I considered myself to be apolitical. But the thing is that I didn't really know why. You know, I really didn't have a clue why. I just kind of assumed that, oh, it's just this big boys club of rich people, you know, and they're doing some damage, but they're not doing that much damage. I mean, they mostly have you know, the American people at heart and stuff. Well, little did I know. But anyway, you know, that's where I was coming from for, you know, most of my life. And then, I guess 9/11, like it was for so many people, mm-hmm. that was a kick in the head. Although, I still didn't really get into it because I'm a media dropout as well. And I mean, really a media dropout as far as not watching TV. I can't tell you when the last time I did. But that was, you know, that was a shakeup, and that I started taking more note of things. So anyway, I guess for me, where it really started was, can fast forward to the financial crash in 2008. And this really hit me personally, because I'm still in a house that's really underwater, big time. And didn't, like so many millions of white Americans, didn't do anything fancy, you know, had a hefty down payment, you know, a typical traditional 30-year mortgage, nothing fancy, you know, not taking out any balloon or any kind of crap. Actually knew how to read my mortgage information and know what I was signing up for. But still, I get to sit in the big, you know, the big dirty puddle with everybody else. So that was part of it. Also, my retirement fund was blown, and that I had just really started, got a late start on it because of all the school I had been through. And, you know, like anger really doesn't begin to describe the feelings, because you know, there's no help. There's no this could have been fixed somewhat, but it became clear that, you know, there wasn't going to be anything done. And of course, then I started to research the Wall Street. So, you know, I had begun my trip down what I call the rabbit hole of Jewish crime. And so that was kind of the start of it. And I also, right around that time, just happened upon this book that really made an impression on me. It's called Mornings in Jenin. I'm not quite sure how to say that, if I'm saying it's Jenin or Jenin. Oh. It's a Palestinian city anyway. And okay. It's that conflict.
J-E-N-E-N?
J-E-N-I-N, I think it is.
I-N, okay.
This woman says that it's it's fiction, but it's clearly not fiction. It's about her family and what they went through. And this was shocking to me. I mean, I only had heard the conflict, the Jew-centered version of it. And I guess it's just amazing that even somebody like me, who was off the stuff completely, didn't watch the news or anything, this information gets in there by osmosis, that Israel's our friend, Israel's always right. And so reading this was just shocking to me, and very emotionally charged too, because, you know, she didn't hold back as far as, you know, the violence and what actually happened to people in Palestine. And so then I began reading a lot about this. And I also, around that time, read the Walt and Mearsheimer book, Israel Lobby. Mm-hmm. And so that was really shocking, too. Even though now I'd say...
Okay, so I never read that book. You know, I, of course, read plenty about it, you thought it was a powerful book. Or maybe powerful if you didn't know everything yet, if you were still kind of...
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, to me, anybody who is like, if you're inclined to want to, if you got somebody that you're trying to convince, somebody that's close to you, that's important to you, that you're trying to tell them about this topic, that's a good place to start. It even comes on audiobook as well. And the guy that does the audiobook is an excellent reader. So I'd highly recommend either version of it. But it's completely shocking. And the only thing that I would, the only bone that I would have to pick with Walt and Mearsheimer is that they do give credence to the hoax, the whole hoax and that. But who knows what they really think? I mean,
they all do. And that is a problem for me. It makes me, it turns me off, even though I understand why they do it, and they might even really believe it, because they haven't looked at it and they don't want to look at it. They don't want to examine it. You know, they won't do that. So they just take it.
These are academics. They're at the University of Chicago or something.
Yeah, right.
Some godforsaken place. That's
one is at University of Chicago. Yeah.
but anyway, that it you know, that's irking, but it wouldn't ruin the book. Because it's not pervasive or anything. It's basically they tag on these things kind of like at the end of things. And, of course, you know, the pain and suffering that the Jews went through, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, we're not saying that they don't deserve their own state, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, the stuff that they expose, even to people who are onto this stuff, I think there'd be something in there for everybody to learn that they'd go, oh, wow. Because it really goes through in gruesome detail how they actually do it, and it's really well researched. So again, if you're online like I've been on YouTube, and somebody says, "Well, I want I want proof of this." Well, you know, this is chock full of proof.
Okay, well that explains why they've been so attacked. Because I would think, well, a book like that, why would they get so? Why would the Jewish lobby get so carried away against it? And they still are. I mean, they try to destroy these men. So obviously, you're saying that it really does the job. It's very convincing against the Jews. So you are.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be good, yeah.
Without, actually, you know, it's probably perfect just the way it is, even with the qualifications that I said before. Because for somebody like me, who, I never really believed all the hula-hoop stuff. I mean, to me, it just on the face of it, a lot of this stuff is just ridiculous. But I didn't realize the extent of it by any matter of means. And at this point, when I came across this Israel Lobby book, it was probably really good that it didn't have anything else in my face.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
So it's probably just perfect the way it is. And it kind of leaves you to draw some of your own conclusions as well. You know, it doesn't just say, you know, these people are basically the most powerful lobby by far, and they're screwing you, you know? I mean, but it leads you in all these different directions to that conclusion, you know? So, yeah, it's a great book. And so between all this, and I'm, you know, also researching the criminals on Wall Street, then I started making, this is when I first started making anti-war vids for YouTube. And
what year was this?
It was just about 2 years ago.
I know this. You've done a whole lot in a short period of time, and
it is lots of fun. I mean, it's not fun taking the abuse on YouTube, but making the vids and stuff is very satisfying for me. But anyway, that's when I started, and you have to understand, I mean, I wasn't putting anything out there about Jews or anything else. This was just like pretty much strictly anti-war and basically showing people the reality of it. And then at the end, basically giving them some information on, you know, writing to their senators and congressmen about how they're opposed to this, blah, 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 blah. It always had some sort of action thing at the end. And yet, what for me the learning experience was, not only learning some of the software, but learning how vicious some of these Jews, especially the ones in Israel. Oh my God. I mean, I wasn't saying anything anti-Israel at that point or anything. And I got death threats on YouTube. I got, I mean, these just violently pornographic comments.
Wow.
And one of the things that really struck me pretty early on was the potty mouths of these people. I mean, maybe Freud was right, but he was only talking about his own people with some of this stuff, because like, talk about anal fixation. I mean,
it's worse if they know you're a woman.
Oh,
they want to attack you with this type, sex type talk.
Oh, absolutely. They wouldn't just want to kill me. They want to cut me up in pieces, and you know, they want to describe exactly what they're going to do and all. I mean, really gruesome stuff. And so for somebody who'd never done this before, this was pretty shocking. Now I've grown a thicker skin, but it's just to me, again, these people who want to deny what these Jews are up to, you got to stick your foot in the water a little bit and try it out. I mean, when you like with this, with me, this isn't what I expected. You know, I didn't go looking for this. And this is what I found, was that, my God, you can't even make it's not even anti-Israel or anything. It's just the least little criticism. And they react with this violence and hatred. It was quite startling. So and of course, the epithet of anti-Semitism. That starts immediately. And of course, again, if you can imagine my mindset at the time, this was like, what? What are you talking about? Now I just think, go ahead and call me that. I probably am at this point, because I think just exposure to you people, any normal person would have to become one, because who wants to be, you know, labeled, or receive this violently pornographic language their way just for simply stating their opinion in a nice, well-researched way. I mean, who wouldn't not like you?
Exactly. I agree.
So, another key book that a lot of people haven't read is Guilt by Association by Jeff Gates. Have you heard of that? Carolyn?
Yes, I'm very familiar with that, but it's another one I didn't read, but I've read about it, so.
there's so much to read, isn't there?
Right,
so,
right. I have my problems with Jeff Gates, but then again, it's these points that most people would overlook, and maybe they're more effective that way. You know, I'm just sensitive to certain points that aren't taken into consideration. But I know when this first came out, it was talked about. I determined I would read it, but I never did get around to it.
Well, it's
so
a bit,
you tell us about it.
Well, it's a bit. It would be a bit dated now, but I'd still recommend people read it. And you might not be able to get it on Amazon because actually, and I won't go off on this story, but I found out, again, going down this rabbit hole has just been amazing because another thing I found out was that if you write anything anti-Israel on Amazon, it'll be taken down too and worse. But I won't go off into that. I'll leave that for another time. But all these things were so mind-boggling to me and still are in a lot of ways, even though I've, you know, kind of gotten used to it. But anyway, they don't sell certain books, as we know. And so you might have to go to his website, which was another learning experience, because this was the first time I had it in my face that Google, also known as Joogle, actually, to go to his website, and I remember putting in, I think his website's called Criminal State.
Yes.
And putting in Jeff Gates Criminal State, and what popped up on Joogle was this warning that I was going to get an infection on my computer if I went to his site. So this was my first exposure to this type of malarkey. And actually, from what I understand, especially these Israelis who are really into doing this type of thing, they're actually infecting people's sites like Jeff Gates. So it's not just an idle threat. But anyway, this was all just like mind-boggling to me. And but as far as his book goes, it's a bit dated, but he does go through, like, piece by piece, these Jewish neocons who were also known as Trotskyites or whatever other hat they want to throw on their heads just to further their little criminal state's agenda. He goes through that, and that's pretty good, but something that's in that book that I didn't expect was that he went through this, I think, really like brilliant analysis, because I actually think Jeff Gates is a really brilliant man, of what's his name? McCain. Now, Jeff Gates is from Arizona. So I can't remember what Jeff Gates had some pretty high up positions himself. He's an attorney. And, you know, he went through using McCain as an example because he apparently knew a lot about him, how the Jews vetted McCain all the way back and all the way up to, well, the present was, you know, like 2007 or something when he wrote this book. So anyway, that it's worth it for that alone, because that's mind boggling too. Again, really well documented, and he just goes through step by step. So here I am, and I'm a scientist, so I think a certain way, and you're not going to sway me easily, but I was just getting hit over the head and hit over the head and hit over the head with all this information that was all pointing one way.
Okay, let me take a moment here because I was meant to mention it in the beginning. I need to tell the listeners that I've not been able to get into my CarolynYeager.com email account. I got it first thing this morning, I did, but at some point I couldn't and still can't. So, if anybody wants to send any email questions about the program there, I might not be able to see them. I'll be checking it, but I try a little just a few minutes ago and just wouldn't go there. So I've been having trouble with all that stuff, that particular CarolynYeager.com for a while. And this is one of the mornings where it seems to be tied up or busy, locked up or something. So that's just for that. So I don't know if we'll have any, if I'll get into it through the whole program, but anyway, that's okay. We'll just keep listening and, I just want to warn people so they don't spend time writing something that for no reason and wonder why it's not being brought on. So, okay, go. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, Marina.
Okay, so let's see. And I'm almost at the getting closer to the to the end of this.
Yeah, of what was hitting you over the head.
My mind blown. But here's another kind of funny thing I thought about that had happened to me that was another eye opener, was the fact that I began learning that sites like Wikipedia were actively patrolled by Jews. And, mm-hmm. and they actually have YouTube vids where they're proudly announcing this. So it's not like, you know, anybody's just saying this. They're saying it themselves. This is what we do and we're proud of it. I mean, that's one of the things you gotta love about these people. It's kind of like, a lot of the stuff they do is just right out there, you know, like we're doing this to you and you better like it, Goy. So this was again, I mean, my mouth, I think that for, you know, a few months straight, my mouth was just open. My jaw was just dropped, you know. And so what I did was I ran some experiments on Wikipedia, and because that's me. And actually, the Internet's great for you can run all kinds of like psychological experiments, et cetera, on the Internet. And what I did was, I just went in and I changed information like you can do or mm-hmm. added. Actually, I don't think I ever changed anything. I added things. So,
okay. Good for you.
But I found out really quickly how well patrolled it was. And like, for example, if you go into Israel, the Israel page, and you just put in something factual. Now, I never put in anything that wasn't true except once, and I'll get to that in a minute, but everything I would ever put in there was absolutely factual, not emotionally charged, just deadpan. This is what happened. This was the date. So if you go into Wikipedia and you try to put something about, like, say, the Stern Gang or any of the other brutal massacres that happened in the 30s and 40s in Palestine by the Israelis, or I guess they would be better known as Zionists at that point because Israel didn't exist yet. If you did that, Carolyn, within an hour, it would be taken down. Within an hour, it would be taken down on Wikipedia. But by contrast, now this is kind of funny. I made up. This is the only time I ever made up something on Wikipedia, and I had full intentions of changing it back if it was never changed. But I made up a ludicrous story about a mass murder at a local post office, and I put it on Wikipedia. And I live in a big town here, a big city. So it's not as if I'm out in Timbuktu someplace. This stayed up on Wikipedia for over a year.
What did you make your own page or did you put that on a page?
Well, if you look at Wikipedia, they actually have everything on there. I didn't have to make a page because this post office was already listed on Wikipedia.
Okay.
So I just
put out a page of this post office added this information.
Made up this whole story about this, you know, this shooting and this whole thing. It stayed up, but if you put something up about Israel that's factual, it will be gone within an hour. So that was very mind boggling. I mean, to just see, you know, just how well the network of these people and what they're doing. And of course, it was probably around this time that I had found, you know, like Reason Radio and stuff and was listening to you and others on there. And then I guess for the last thing that I would say as far as my like conk over the head, has to do with actually those videos that you saw of mine, the In Praise of White Men. Mm-hmm. And people can look at those themselves and, you know, you can kind of find out the story in more detail, but, it's about, I met this, well, I literally fell over this homeless white man. And, you know, I ended up helping him out. And I didn't do much. I mean, I basically helped him live a little more easily in the rough, you know, gave him some camping equipment and food and brought him food and stuff like that. I actually showed him a place that he could like set up camp and not be disturbed because I go walking a lot and I know some of the, you know, little secret areas that you might find that people don't usually go to and things like that. So anyway, those In Praise of White Men were, the way they're set out is, you know, the first one is like his letter to me. And then the second mm-hmm. part is my letter back to him. But in reality, even though part of it is really like stuff that he actually said word for word or things like that, it's really just based on our conversations, because he was the first person that I met that I could talk to about this stuff.
Okay. And when was this then? Are these the first videos you made after these anti-war videos, or?
No, I actually started then. I kind of like was sliding more and more into anti-Israel videos and getting more open about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a continuum.
Yeah, because I want to tell the listeners that I've only seen your two-part video In Praise of White Men, and I've seen Working While White. Both of those are on YouTube. And yeah. I've seen now Miss Fossil Chutzpah, which is also on YouTube, which I just looked at this morning. And the others that you had on another site that I had to do something to join something, whatever, to download something in order to download them. I didn't get around to that. So, but this is what I've seen and am very impressed with. I was impressed as soon as that In Praise of White Men part one started. Immediately thought, darn, this is good, and just got better and better. So, of course, I was totally blown away by part two. But we'll get into that. So yeah, this is, at first I thought maybe this was your real brother. And then I thought, no, it didn't sound like it, but you were calling brother. And finally it took me a while, yesterday when I was looked at him again, I realized, oh, I see he's calling you sister. And so then you're calling him brother, but it's not your actual brother.
I like that you didn't quite know, because I think it's kind of good. I kind of meant it to be a little bit, you know, to pique people's interest a little bit, to draw them in and to not just expose the whole thing really blatantly, you know, having the pictures of the tent cities and, you know, things like that. But I mean,
it's great. Your instincts are just right, because, it did make it, and the way you opened with that old kind of old fashioned 19th century looking pen and ink bottle or whatever, you know, like you were writing that way. The whole thing was you had to kept thinking, you know, trying to figure it out. So it kept you interesting, and it was a great opening to that. Just
oh well, thank you. One of these days I'm going to redo it with, now that I have real video software. I was only using this crappy little program that comes on Windows 7 that I was really hot wiring to do more things with it. And then I finally, just a couple months ago, really got some good software, and it's like, wow, why didn't I do this sooner? But anyway, you know, for what it is, you know, I was pleased with how it came out. But it was just one of those things. I think it just was that I actually didn't make that vid until he was already back on his feet and everything. Now I had made a vid about meeting him that wasn't this one at all, and I did it really to encourage people to help these you know, folks who are now homeless and jobless and you know, worked hard all their lives and have been screwed royally. And and that was another learning experience, because, you know, at this point, a lot of the people, I had a pretty much a mixed bag of people who were subbed to me on YouTube, and they, a lot of them were like so-called liberals, and they really did poo-poo this idea. First of all, it was a white man that I helped, and this was where I was starting to get conked over the head with just how racist these people are. I mean, I know some people say don't even use the word, but I'm going to use the word right against them, because they are anti-white, and that's That's racism. They don't even care about helping some down and out person through no fault of their own who was like screwed financially. And I think that's true racism. Just because of the color of their skin, they wouldn't help them. But anyway, that was where it started for me, was as far as the anti-white part of it, or the pro-white part of it for me, was that seeing that, wow, you folks would, I mean, if I had said that I had helped a black man or, you know, an illegal alien, you'd be applauding. But see, you know, to me, at bottom, these type of people, whether they call themselves liberal or conservative or whatever, most people just aren't stirred to do any kind of action. They just talk, you know, as far as actually doing something practical like this. They wouldn't bother anyway. They like hearing about it though, because, you know, they've got that Christianity deep down inside these liberal white people. It's in their bones. They don't want to admit it, but it's in there. And, you know, they want to feel like they're doing good, you know, without doing anything, but they want to feel like they're doing good, which is how the propaganda really works well on them. But anyway, you know, it wasn't till quite a bit after that I actually made the In Praise of White Men. And it was really after I did get the email from him, saying that he was, and thanking me and you know, saying that things were better, much better for him now, and et cetera, et cetera.
That's great. Okay. So, well, so what can you tell us about now? I'd like to make this comment that these videos of yours that are on YouTube are not uploaded in your name, but you did have a YouTube account. Your account was taken down. Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to talk about it at all? But you don't have your own account up yet, but other people have taken those videos and copied them and uploaded them. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, you know, it's I've had several accounts now that were taken down, or I even canceled them myself, because what they do, and one of the things I found out pretty early on, even with just the anti-wars, Google, YouTube will take down whatever it damn well pleases, and it doesn't really matter. They'll take it down if there's anything that's anti-Jew, anti-Israel, even if it takes a stretch of the imagination, it'll come down somehow.
But there's a lot of anti-Jew, anti-Israel stuff on YouTube. So how do we explain that? Why do they go after some things and not others?
I think one of the things they really don't like, I was one of the only ones that was actually using my own material and not just putting up stuff that other people said, or, you know, they tend to not touch that stuff as much. Like,
oh,
that,
you know, like copies of, or copies of books and writings. A lot of YouTubes are based on that.
They seem to not touch that. It seems like, and they're probably smart in this, in that it is more effective. I mean, you were, just as I was describing how you impressed me. I think there's a real power in that when you hear an individual person and you hear they're not nuts, they're fairly intelligent, and you hear them saying this stuff, it is powerful. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one reason.
Yeah, because I think some of that stuff that I was indicating there is over the top in a way, and they might not even care about things that are over the top because they figure it's bad publicity for us. Whereas something that is, as you just said, more convincing from a sane and reasonable, more ordinary type of person, that's what they would be worried about.
It also has to be flagged. So I don't know how all that works, but, you know, I think what happened to me too is that, you know, my original channel was Orwell's Daughter. And like I said, I just had this mixed bag of people who were subbed to me, and I was kind of careful with, I mean, I often unsubbed people because I wasn't a sub whore. I could care less, and I didn't you know, I didn't want all these just faceless, I call them faceless, voiceless pussies, just subbed to me, who were just going to harass me. But be that as it may, it was a mixed bag of people. And there were quite a bit of so-called liberals. And I think that when I started making the shift over, they were flagging me. And mm-hmm. then when I lost that channel and I started another one, Orwell's Daughter, what I can't even remember what I called it now, but they followed me over. They a lot of the people, and they started flagging it again. So that's what starts to happen. So it's almost like you know, at this point, I have a couple channels that are just Orwell's Daughter's not in there at all. So they can't just find me that way.
Okay.
Because people are that vindictive. I mean, they have that much time on their hands that this is the type of stuff they do. But it's also these Jews who are on there patrolling YouTube. You know, nobody could convince me otherwise. They're on there. And that's what they do. They're either paid or unpaid to just go on there and search out stuff like this and flag it. Sadly, I'll also add that I'm pretty convinced that the one time I was flagged, and if you get flagged twice, then your channel is just down. You can't use it. Mm. You can't get on there. But it still shows, so people don't even know that your hands are tied. People don't even know your channel's down, which is really unfair of YouTube. But anyway, the one time I'm pretty sure it was this guy who considered himself to be pro-white because he was like writing abusive things to me, and I blocked him. I'm not there to, you know, I'm not even there to waste my time with all these comments and everything with these people. Go ahead and get up and say things yourself. I don't have all day to sit here writing back comments to you.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, why do you think this pro-white guy was saying bad things about you? What was it because you were a woman, or what was?
Well, no, I think he was just a jerk. Play footsie with me, and I wasn't interested in playing footsie
okay.
with
yeah.
me. You know, he was one of those type of guys. Fortunately, I think he's in the minority of the way men act, but he was one of those. And you know, when I like rejected his advances, I guess you could say, then he was pissed. And then when I blocked him, he was really pissed.
Yeah. But that's exactly right. I've had that not on YouTube, but I've had that same experience.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, you know, I just think, what do you think I'm doing here? You know, I just have all right. day to babysit you. But anyway, that's YouTube. I mean, it's and now it's so huge that it's really impossible. It seems like for every hour you put into it, you might get 1 second back of what's the word I want of good that you've done because of all these setbacks and all these things where they can just flag you. And, you know, it's, and every time that happens and you go to a new channel, fewer people follow you over there. Cause you know, a lot of these people aren't even on YouTube anymore, et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of a mess. So now I just put actually those in that In Praise of White Men, that is my channel, Censor Whitey.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I just thought it was kind of mad when I made up that channel. It was like, okay, Censor Whitey. And, you know, that is my channel, but I don't really go there. Those two are up there, and I'm just, this is the longest they've been up. I mean, usually part two is the one that really gets flagged. That one.
Oh, yeah.
It hasn't been so far. So, anyway, but some of my other ones that most of my videos have just been, I get on my Stairmaster and I always say that at the beginning, I'm going to be out of breath and I do a rant. And then, you know, I usually do a background for it, a vid to go with it. And, those get taken down really quick. They get taken down really quick.
Why?
Well, you have to hear them, I guess. You know, I mean, I just don't, I don't really hold back as far as what I think about what's going on. And I, as I explain to people, I I researched just hundreds of hours before reaching some of the conclusions I've reached. This wasn't just like something I took lightly to reach some of the conclusions I've reached about who's running this country, who's running our most of our corporations, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, once I did reach the conclusions, I felt compelled to put it out there. And, yet I don't couch it in things. You know, I don't say Zionists, but I did start using other words because I thought it might help not getting flagged. So I started calling them the poos. And,
oh yeah.
And I also have another word, the culpritics, because of this anti-Semitism, and I call it anti-culpritic. That was another word I made up to talk about them. So I made up some words, but they're still, because they're my own made up words, people know exactly who I'm talking about. But when people start talking about the Illuminati and this other stuff, I mean, it just loses me. I just think, you know, it's not magical. It's not, you know, it's not some, you know, some big magical force. These are flesh and blood humans who are criminals and deserve to be jailed. So knock it off about the Illuminati, would you? You know what I'm saying? It's just, kind of all this. It's just a way for people to avoid having this in their face, who it is, what they're doing, and what needs to be done.
Well, what would you say about your video Working While White, which is on YouTube? And I don't know what the channel is. You might tell people, but I will put a link to it on the program page, but I didn't put it in the announcement.
It's called Goy Memory Hole, or it's either Goy Memory Hole or just Memory Hole.
Yeah. And this one is Memory Hole. That's right. Memory Hole. And it's, the title is Working While White, and it's a bit different from In Praise of White Men. It's really powerful, hard to take stuff, and it just gave me the willies and the chilies. And you know, if you're a white woman, what you're doing makes a big impact, and a bigger impact than most other stuff that people are putting up there. And that's what we need. You know, I think that's what we need. And I think you designed this or just did it instinctively to break through people's general apathy if they actually watch it all the way through. So what would you like to say about that video?
Well, you know, that one's actually more the bulk of my work, where it's just extemporaneous. I'm not, In Praise of White Men, I had written that and then, you know, read it. And I do some like that. That's very nice. But most of the time it's raw and it's live for my Stairmaster. And that was one of them, but it was based on that young woman that, you know,
that mother,
27 years old, butchered. It's beyond the pale for me. Butchered by these two young black savages.
And they were women, females, right?
Well, I only had the picture of the one because the shysters, because he was underage, wouldn't allow his picture.
Oh, he was male.
The usual protection for these criminals in our culture. You know, I mean, in any kind of a more normal culture, the picture of these two criminals would be all over the place. Look at them, you know, throw a stone at them. You know, but they only showed her picture, the 18-year-old, but it was her and I don't know if a brother or a friend or what, but the younger black male who was underage. So they bludgeoned this woman who was delivering, I mean, here she is working this crap job at Domino's, but not taking welfare, working at Domino's, delivering pizzas, and instead of paying her for the pizza they ordered, they bludgeoned her to death. And, you know, I guess that just, as you can hear from my voice, really got to me. And there's all kinds of stories like this happening every day, my sister just told me a story about back home where I come from, something that happened to a British tourist and her elderly mother by these blacks. And, you know, it's happening every day, but this Jewish media is, you know, if they say anything about it, it's like they're forced to because it's a really big story, but they always use the term youth or something. And they mm-hmm. keep leading white people to believe that it's white people committing all this crime against people of color when it's so far from the truth. And that's what gets me. I mean, if it were true, I would be thinking, what is wrong with my people and what can we do to help this? This is, you know, but when it comes to blacks committing 10 times more crime than whites, what do they do when you say that? And it's solid evidence. I mean, you know, year after year, this is what's been for decades, mm-hmm. but what they just get angry at us. They get angrier at us. I mean, to me, the normal reaction would be like, my God, what's wrong with my people that they're doing this? What's wrong with us? But instead, and so then we have the Jewish media who's misrepresenting this. And I think they are criminal for doing that. And then this whole, like, when you look at something like this Trayvon Martin case, where they're stirring these people up they know they're easily stirred up. And what's happening? Well, then the violence against whites just escalates from something like that. And to me, I can't sit back and watch it. I can't sit back and watch somebody like that young woman bludgeoned to death, and nobody even said a word except locally.
And then the soundtrack on that video is just, you know, not too many people would have the nerve or the guts or the courage to make it out as bad as it really is. You know, and the sound of that black fellow saying again and again, you know, what he was saying, I don't even want to say the words, but you know, it basically about raping a white woman and what he's going to do, and he's got hold, it sounds like he's got hold of one. I don't know if it's from a song or something, but anyway, it's enough to, you know, horrify you. I know they talk like that, they think like that, and if I just imagine being the one who has somehow gotten caught by these guys, some of this, a little group like this, or kidnapped or somehow, you know, in their hands. And, oh, Lord, I think hearing that kind of talk would be almost worse than anything that was happening. Just listening to them.
Well, you know what? And I promise you, Carolyn, that part of the soundtrack, now it's a Clash song in the background, but that black voice is just a random black guy on YouTube. That's where I got that. Mm-hmm. I didn't find that anyplace special. I happened across it. And there's hundreds more like it. That's the way they talk. And it's allowed on YouTube. Isn't that funny?
When yeah, they could exactly. Absolutely, that shouldn't be. That's filthy, filthy stuff.
Yeah, saying, well, I'm going to take you for a ride, and we're going to find us a light-skinned bitch, and we're going to knock that bitch upside the head, and, you know, we just fuck them because we don't respect them. And the whole thing, I mean, this is just on YouTube. This is just some guy, you know, talking into his microphone, and this is the type of stuff they allow up on YouTube, where something that's actually thoughtful and thought-provoking and doesn't contain any, you know, any violence is taken down. But anyway, that young woman and all those like her, I just decided, well, really, if this doesn't get through, and you see my dedication at the beginning to the radical egalitarians, mm-hmm. you know, if that doesn't get through, then nothing will, especially to the women out there. Cause they know what it is.
I think this is very powerful for a woman if they would actually watch it. And if they would believe it, that it wasn't some big hoax or, you know, you're making something up or you invented it or something like that. People will come up with all those kinds of excuses in their mind so that they don't have to believe it. And face it, I imagine they do.
Well, that's why I put in all those statistics. That's why I pepper the stuff. You know, I might, when I'm talking and I sound, well, I'm out of breath too. It get my heartbeat's way up. And so I you know, kind of gets me in the mood to do a rant. And, you know, that's why, but then I pepper it with the information that's well documented, you know, with the printing that's throughout, you know. So it's kind of like, if you, all you got to do is put it into Google if you're really interested. Because when I hear back from these people, well, I want a link to this. And I think, well, I'm not your research assistant, dear heart. But all you have to do, especially when it comes to crime, this is the easiest thing to investigate in the world. I mean, these youngins don't even realize. I mean, they've got this internet. If I had had the internet when I was in my 20s, my God. I mean, the information you can get so easily if you know how to look. But the crime on the non-whites versus the whites, that's easily found. They don't want, you know, so it's basically, to me, when it comes to something like that, that's well documented. If you want to find out, it's very easy to find out. But if you don't want to find out, then you just don't want to. You want to keep believing that, you know, white people are awful, terrible, and bad. We have our problems, but one of them isn't violent crime. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's all right. We just got our 60-second warning. I forgot that we get a warning for the break, but I guess so. As we're just going to be going to the break. Well, I was going to say, though, that this, well, now that threw it out of my mind. Doesn't take much. Doesn't take
yeah,
much to take something out of my mind. But this black crime thing is so common. And I think one thing that people who see it, then they want to tell themselves that, well, this doesn't happen very often. But, you know, I've seen so much of it, I can hardly believe so much of it takes place. And it, this poor woman, you know, she was had a young daughter and looked like a daughter and a husband.
And was possibly pregnant.
And possibly pregnant. And she worked, worked this job to help out. And then this happens. It's just, it should be national news. All right, we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, in 5 minutes.
Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while? Need the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you are only 19 when you joined the Great Fallen in 1916. I hope you died well, and I hope you died clean. Our young Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did you leave it a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. Although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, enclosed and forever behind the glass frame, in an old photograph torn, battered and stained, and faded to yellow in the brown leather frame? Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did I sound the death march as he lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? And did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun, now it shines on the green fields of France. There's a warm summer breeze, it makes the red poppies dance, and look how the sun shines from under the clothes. There's no gas, no barbed wire, there's no gun firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses stand mute in the sand. To man's blind indifference, to his fellow man, to all generation that were butchered and damned. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as he lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the fall? A young Willie, my bride, I can't help wonder why. To those that lie here, know why did they die? And did they believe when they answered the call? Did they really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the sorrow, the suffering, the glory, the pain, the killing and dying were all done in vain. For young Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again and again and again and again. Today beat the drums.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager, and we're in the second hour now of this two-hour program. My guest is Marina Orwell, who is a video maker, and we've been talking in the first hour all about her videos. Before I go on, I want to tell people that I can't get into my email still, so I can't be taking any email questions at the moment. I'm sorry about that, and I want to again welcome the listeners who are here listening live. I'm happy to have you here with us as we actually do the program. Too bad you can't applaud or say something, you know, join in, but that's the way it is for now. Or that's the way it is on these programs anyway. Probably will stay that way. Now, Marina, I would like to thank you for your forthrightness in the first hour. And I, before we go on to the subject of the white woman herself, I would like to ask you what might be coming up. And what about, is your biggest problem just staying on the internet, keeping your videos up on the internet, and should people be encouraged to download and upload them on their own sites? Of course, you know, I'd like to put them on the White Network site, and I hope we will do that in the future. Is there permission needed for that, or do you give permission for that, or what?
Well, I do to you, but I have to say that YouTube's a different story, because sometimes what people do is they use it for nefarious ends. You know, it's YouTube. I'm telling you, it's psychological experiments abound on YouTube. It's endless. But some of these people, what they do is they take your vids and then they use them to make fun of you, which hurts. You know, I mean, I'll be honest. So, or there's people who will just upload it the way it is, but then they allow other people to make fun of you. So I guess when it comes to YouTube, unless I know the person, if they want to copy my vid and put it up, I prefer that they disable the comments, because, you know, I'm not made of stone, and having these people make their rude stuff. Plus, you know, I'm not a believer in egalitarianism in really any way. And to me, there's a hell of a difference between actually putting the time and energy into making videos that are, you know, your own thing, not just copies of something. and putting your own heart and your own mind into it and using your own voice than people who just want to make random comments. Sorry, you know, I'm the king of this castle. This is my intellectual property. And, you know, I want to have, I guess, a little bit of control over this. You know, on YouTube, I know this wouldn't happen on the White Network, but on YouTube, allowing all these people to make these rude comments, I just don't see why people allow
it. I guess they're not moderated at all, YouTube, unless the person, well, it's somebody's page. So I guess if they want to moderate it, they can. So that's why you're saying that sometimes they don't, and they just allow a lot of nasty stuff. Yeah, I don't read comments on YouTube, and I never even joined YouTube. I can't make comments on anything. I don't care. I'm not going to. And I think you're correctly. I don't know who would spend their time reading the millions and millions and millions of comments that go up on the internet every day. I mean, it's just overdone.
But if you're on your own vid, there's not many. And here, let me give you an example. There's a popular YouTuber who somehow came across me and just took my vid and put it up. Now, I was supposed to be flattered by this because, of course, he's big on YouTube. And I love that, too. I mean, how Jewified are we that we actually think like you're a star because you've got lots of faceless, voiceless little pussy icons on your computer that say you have all these subs? I mean, how far gone are we anyway? Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was supposed to be flattered. But, you know, I live in the real world. And, you know, to me, you ask somebody's permission. Well, anyway, he put it up and he didn't even credit me or anything, just put it up. And then he allowed these people to peck me to death in their comments. And the thing was, is that this guy is like anti-Israel, but he's not pro-white. He's not even a white person. And so that kind of bothered me too. And so my commentary was the whole salami, you know, and it was pro-white as well. And all the comments were going through this stuff is, oh, well, she's, what's wrong with her that she keeps bringing up white people and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Well.
And that pissed me off that he was just, that he took my vid, didn't credit me. And then he was answering them with his higher than mighty, brown mentality of, you know, how screwed up whites are. And I just thought, this is so messed up. And I asked him to take it down, and it took him a while. I mean, I kind of had to threaten him with shysters if he didn't take it down. But you know, that's the problem is that, you know, there's the, sure, people who want to use it. And I know some people on YouTube who are doing pro-right white bids and, you know, without a doubt, you know, they'd have my permission. But you see, and you don't know people on there, mm-hmm. the stuff they do, yeah.
I can certainly understand that. I appreciate that you giving your viewpoint on that. Now, so there should be a protocol, and people who are decent should follow that protocol, and they should ask permission. Is there a way to do that? Or if they don't, people who don't agree with the video shouldn't be taking it. Well, you're never going to deal. You know, you're never going to get those people to deal properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take that back that people should have permission.
Yeah, there's no protocol. There's no nothing anymore. I mean, that's a big part of the problem, isn't it? I mean, there's no manners, there's no nothing, and it just keeps going down and down further and further and further. And you know,
well, the internet. I think I'm a believer that everything that you can name has its positive value and its negative problems. I hate using the word negative that way, but it's negative value. And the internet is certainly easy to see that. We see how much what the internet has done for us, but at the same time, it just makes any kind of junk go possible for any and everybody who can buy a computer and poke on some keys, you know. And of course, I'm sure that the things I say and do and have said and done, some people who would think very differently from me would put me in that category. We're not egalitarians, but it is an egalitarian, setup, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And I agree with what you're saying, but what I mean is that in the real, it's also a reflection of the real world, and the real world is going down and down and down. I mean, mm-hmm. just how crass people are, how they talk to each other, how, you know, I mean, it's, and so the internet just magnifies that. I mean, that young man, that young black man, that recording we were just talking about, can you possibly imagine? Now, let's pretend that we had the internet back in the 50s or 60s. Can you even imagine something like that going up on the internet and being allowed up?
No.
You simply could not imagine it. You could not imagine that somebody would be able to just blatantly talk about going out and raping white women. And it
Negro people who were called Negroes at that time, they did not consider they could get away with anything like that. They did not consider doing anything like that. Oh, I'm sure here and there, rarely, but mostly, that kind of thing didn't happen then in the 50s and even in the 60s, but later on in the 60s, I guess, whenever all this started. But now, as I was saying yesterday, like it's like the frog in the pot of water that you turn the heat on, because people have gotten accustomed little by little by little to this crazy stuff that, as you just said, would not at one time was just unthinkable. Not that long ago.
And to me, the main force for this, and I think I'm right, and it would be hard to convince me that I'm not right, is the media. What has caused people to allow themselves to be frogs in the increasingly hot water is watching the media that has just keeps turning up the dial just a little bit more and a little bit more all these decades till now. This is what we have. And now we have this violent pornography that you can't even believe anybody would want to see this. It's so disgusting. And yet this is what we have. And I think, you know, and actually with the porn theme, they're actually wondering, because they can't turn the dial up any further. They've actually made it so horrible that there's nothing else they can do to make it worse. So the pornographers are scratching their heads saying, oh my gosh, like we're maxed out now. What do we do? And so anyway, you know, the dial's all the way turned up.
Well, how about you? Because, I was going to bring up the pornography scenes in your part two of In Praise of White Men, which were just blew me away. Oh my God, I tell you, they really affected me. And when you you've gone pretty far with some of the, how far would you go, how far can you go with this, showing what pornography is all about and what's being done, what white people are and white women are going along with? And so that kind of goes in with something I was going to ask and didn't quite ask, was what might be coming up, what direction would you be going in? Would you be going further in that humiliation of white women and how they are even engaging in it, I mean, volunteering for it?
Well, you know, it's like you were talking in your last show, I think your Heretics Hour show, about wedge issues, about the circumcision, and I agree with you that these wedge issues are important, because I'm not into like trying to attract like a bunch of brainwashed liberals or something, but I also think that I have to remain humble, because I was I believed a lot of this stuff too, and not so long ago. But I do think that once that the switch is flipped for somebody, it remains flipped, because there's no way to turn it back, because it's just the truth. You know, it's the truth about all this stuff. And so how could you flip the switch back? And so I guess for me, I'm still wanting to come up with some wedge issues to for all that, like maybe like one out of 1,000 people who are actually going to be moved by it and start looking into things on their own, like I did, you know, when I heard your stuff. And I think that this porn stuff, having already done anti-porn things before any of this other stuff, I even know some of that, like, YouTube community. And that might be those folks respect me. And that might be a way to address things with them. Also, this violence against women. I think that for some of these young women that I know via YouTube, if they actually know the facts, I don't think they'd be the type to just ignore it. You know, they're not that liberal. that would be one direction. I have a lot of interests. I actually also really believe that we should be, whoever we, the royal we here, whoever feels like it, kind of coming up with what I'm considering to be white soul food. You know, things that kind of, touch us, whether it is things like you're doing and other people are doing with, telling the truth about World War II and our ancestors, but also on the less horrifying end of things. I have this one vid that I really like called, How White Men Prevailed and How They'll Prevail Again. And it's a little short story that I narrate that I made up, and it has, visuals that go along with it. And I capture something in that about white men that might resonate for both white men and white women. And things like that, which kind of like we've been so bombarded by this ugly, really alien crap through the media all these years that, I'm kind of interested in providing some things that like maybe knock at the heart a little bit and say, remember this? Remember, this is the way your people are. Don't listen to, what I call Big Jew Brother. I mean, stop listening to Big Jew Brother and start remembering. And anyway, I'm getting preachy.
Yeah. No, that's fine, because I want to segue right into, we know that white women are getting a very bad rap for some time now by white men, particularly white nationalist men. Not the culture, not the culture out there that wants to turn white women into bimbos and whorish creatures and so on. But the perplexing situation of white women today, and I don't defend everything about white women. I defend white women to the extent that, don't just look at the faults of white women, but look at the faults of white men too. But you call yourself a white feminist, and I think I'd like you to explain that to the listeners, and we can go on from that point.
Well, yeah, and I know it's a big, scary word, because it's. I mean, I call myself that, but I'm really, I hesitate, because what feminism has turned into, like so many things that have been touched by our favorites, the chosen, is the exact opposite of what it actually is. And it, you know, really, it Orwellian doesn't begin to describe what these people have done to so many things. But I guess all I want to say about it, because it's such a huge topic, but feminism didn't start with the Jews. It just simply didn't. So get that idea out of your head. This was started by white women, strong, proud, very intelligent. One of them was married to our second president, et cetera, et cetera. And these weren't like crazy women who didn't want to have kids and, wanted to embrace the LGB, whatever else, freak community. They weren't anything of the kind, but they did get the vote. And one of the things I say to young feminists nowadays is, do you ever wonder why nothing positive has happened since those white women got the vote? And then once the Jews took over feminism, there hasn't been one positive thing that's come out of it. It's just been a bunch of hooey. And that does make them scratch their heads a little bit. Because really now it's just like, invite all the freaks in, invite these people. Look, we're supposed to accept, for example, these men who decided that they're really women. And, this is what's going on in feminism now. where there's like arguments whether these people are women or not. I don't care. They're not women. They're, I don't know what they are now. My father used to use the word shim. And I think that's what I'd kind of go with. They're shims, but they're not women. They weren't born women and they'll never be women. But anyway, that's what it's like turned into this freak show, and it's turned into, you know, there's all these little sects, and, you know, there's this big pro porn sect, and they actually have the audacity to call themselves pro sex. And they have the audacity to call the women who are against this gruesome, horrible pornography anti-sex. I mean, this is how Orwellian it's become. So it's hard for me to even really use the word, but to me, feminism is just, is simply, white women are equal to white men. We're different. That doesn't hear it now. I didn't say we're the same. But if you don't think that we're equal, then you really don't know a lot about the, about IQ studies and all kinds of things that I'm actually an expert at. And I think that we need a new word, because I really don't even like what feminism has turned into is a trash bin that I don't really want to be associated with. But white women aren't these creatures that Hollywood has turned us into. And it started way back. I mean, these men who think that they want to go back to the 50s, like Leave It to Beaver or something. I mean, that's not going to happen. And think about it now. That wasn't even real. That was Hollywood. That Hollywood had already started to debase our culture. And especially they debased white women. And I guess I just think that I certainly don't know all the answers, but by far. But I feel anytime I look at these issues between white men and white women, I think we really need, we're creative, intelligent people, but we're very creative. And I think that we can come up with creative solutions to our gender issues. And I just think it would benefit everybody. But thinking that women are going to go back to, I don't know. I'm not trying to put down white men here at all, believe me, but these men who think that women are just going to be baby machines or something. I mean, come on. We're just like you in so many ways. We really are. Mm-hmm. We're more alike than we are different. And, all you have to do is put yourself in our shoes and say, like, what would you want to be relegated to? Well, I'm all for, I mean, one of the big problems that we have in our culture is that kids aren't being raised, and that's usually the mom, and I'm not against that at all. There's nothing better than, and there's nothing more important than people who are actually parenting their kids. They're actually parenting their kids. I mean, that there's so few of them anymore.
Together as a couple, And there's no question but that the mother is the important element in the early years of children, you know, infants and children. The mother is the important one, but then they start expanding out. But there's, for me, well, I'm going to jump in here a little bit. I would agree. I think men and women are different but equal, and I'm all for. I can't understand this idea that we're not equal. That's the wrong way to put it. That doesn't mean we're identical and that we don't have different roles, as I just intimated, you know. And I think I was saying yesterday that it's real easy to see that men have the role of actually becoming soldiers and warriors and defending their people and their families and so on, and not women. And women have the role of bearing and raising the children, particularly when they're young and being their nurturing young children. And there's no getting around that. So both of them have to do something that might be not exactly, you know, their favorite thing to do. You know, it's not exactly how they would like to do things, but this is what their duty is. But apart from that, not all women are alike, and not all women can be expected to do even to do that much, because there are always women who don't marry and don't have children, and there are men also. Well,
there just could be better ways to do it. I mean, it's, you know, and to me, I think that I mean, if I picture, and of course it's just total fantasy land, but if I picture like a white republic, I don't just picture the leaders being male, and that's not because I consider myself a white feminist or something. I actually think that things get perverted when women don't have input, and we see this. I think that that female input is important. You can't just leave out half of the voices. But as far as motherhood and all that, I mean, yeah, I mean, to be a soldier, to have to actually do that, I mean, I can't imagine it. And I think that we need to start building respect again, you know, respect for the roles that we each have, real respect. I mean, all of this has just been so degraded. When I think of the soldiers now, I mean, they're mercenaries. They're mostly mercenaries, or they're people who, a lot of them, I'll just say it, and I don't mean to insult anybody out there, but a lot of them, it's just, they couldn't do anything else. And that's not what the military used to be, because now nobody really believes in anything. So I can't blame people for just being mercenaries in the military. I mean, why else would you do it? Because you like Obama? Because you want to serve the Jews and the Israelis? I mean, get out of here.
No, but it's a paycheck, and it's a pension. It's a way to get through life. And like you say, for a lot of men, that's better than anything else they could ever get. So they do it, even though it's not ideal.
But a real military like what we used to have, mm-hmm. and all those poor suckers who signed up for the two world wars. I mean, my heart just bleeds for those guys. You know, just really bleeds for those guys that they joined up because they thought they were doing their duty. You know, they really just gave their lives in vain, but their heart was in the right place. And for that kind of military, I think women really need to have a lot of respect, and they've lost that respect. They really have lost that respect through what's been happening with our actual military, but also just because, I mean, for some women, they really want to believe that there aren't any differences between men and women.
Yeah. And that's the true feminist.
That's crazy.
The true feminist. And I've read some statements by feminists, Jewish feminists, that I just couldn't even believe the first time I ever read them. I could not believe them, where they are actually saying that childbearing is not necessarily a role of a woman. It's part of the social construct and so on. And wanting to, you know, nurture children is not a part of anything in a woman. It's just they've just been taught that. And, there are no roles whatsoever, for men and women, and this nonsensical stuff, which is just totally damaging to social fabric. And that's what it's meant to be. That's feminism. Women who stand up for themselves should not be considered feminists. But a lot of these, of course, I don't know how much these men matter, but the men that you find at white nationalist forums, particularly one I have in mind, you know, they're just rabid anti-female. What's that word for a man who's anti-female again?
Misogynist.
Yeah, right. You know, that's what they are. And for God knows what reasons they have, and God knows who they really are in real life too.
And see, I guess I think that actually helpful. That this needs to be addressed, because, there's a whole bunch of women out there that are never ever going to hear this, what we're trying to put across. If they're going to come across this anti-woman stuff, I can tell you that having just told my big story, at least part of it, about how I came to this, if I had run across some of this, because I know what you're talking about, not nearly as much as you have at this point, but if I had run across that right at the beginning, I would have been holding my nose. you know, because it really is. I don't know where these white guys think they're going to go without the women. Where do they think they're going to go without the women? And women, I am not so like pro woman or something to me, the women are just as screwed up as the men are. So I can just make that straight here.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
I
right.
don't have, you know, I'm not, you know, biased in any way in that way because, and in fact, I probably could say I probably in a lot of ways get along better with men than I do with women if push came to shove, and I had to decide. But it's just, that without the women in this movement, it's just not going to go anywhere. Or it's going to be this, like, you know, I see this even, I'm young in this. I don't mean age-wise. I mean, I'm young in this movement. And I see how men have this tendency, which I love in them. This they really get caught up in their heads. And so do I. I mean, I think that's a white thing. We really are creative and we get caught up intellectually. But I think that women are more practical, at least right now. That's the way we are. And, you know, we can kind of cut through that a little bit and say, this is what needs to be done, though. This is what needs to be done. And that's important. I mean, because like, we want this to go somewhere, don't we?
Yeah.
Or die trying.
Yes. And, you know, well, that's all very good. You know, I agree with what you're saying. And I still can't find a better model, overall model, because that's what I'm more familiar with than some other historical periods and national groups. But then the Third Reich in the way that they handled male-female issues, and a lot of people have the wrong idea that it was a very totally male-dominated society and women were relegated to household and child-rearing and really didn't have any opportunities and so on. And what was actually happening there was that that country, that nation of people, of German people, and when they came back to thinking of themselves as Germans and wanting to be united and bring their country back into a place of prosperity and respectability, and they agreed with that, and the roles were explained, and mostly they went along with them, that they needed to increase the birth rate as we do. They needed to have more German children because that had gone drastically down. And the men needed to go to work. And the men, there was terrific unemployment. The men needed to be employed before the women were. And so men got preference in employment. Women were encouraged, strongly encouraged, but they were also rewarded to get married and the men to get married too, to make a home, to start having children, to ideally aim at having four if they could, and, you know, eventually, and to, they were given financial incentives, you know, for the first child and the second child and so on. And they had a lot of programs, which were nicely done to, teach young women, homemaking skills and menu planning and all of these domestic things. And they gave a lot of recognition, and they had women's they had a woman who was in charge of the big national women's organization. I've written about her, and you know, to acknowledge, and they always acknowledged women. They were very polite and chivalrous to their women, and these German men treated their wives and well. I'm not saying that there were no affairs. There was no cheating. There was none of that ever going on. That's always going to go on, I think. Not that I'm condoning
well,
it, but it's
going to
go on. You know, there's always
there's
that.
Never gonna
but
be
I mean,
perfect.
But and then there were a lot of women in the Third Reich who were exceptional women, and once they showed what they could do, they were allowed to do it. And Hannah Reich is just one, but there are a lot of them who. Some married also, but some didn't marry. They didn't have children. They had careers that were quite unusual for women, even, you know, helping militarily, but they were not actual members of the military. And they didn't allow women to join the military, but they could be in certain auxiliary services, which they were finally when they were really needed. And it just worked, you know, it worked. And this is the model that this is the best model that I see. for men and women right now.
You don't have to give me, if you can send me links or something to books about this, because I don't know very much about it. I'd really be curious to read and learn more about that program, because I really don't know much about, I was telling you before, about political science or anything. That's not my, it's not my interest. It's just something I don't know much about at this point. But, I was thinking when you were describing this, the National Socialism, that, you can take that in an even broader perspective and not even just look at it as far as men and women go, but in a more, in a culture that isn't diverse. I think that, people used to recognize that not everybody's going to be a doctor. Not everybody's going to be, a rocket scientist. That was just the way it is. And people weren't angry about that, or they accepted it. But I think part of that acceptance was because people were treated with respect. People felt that, they certainly respected their family doctor, but they really, I don't think, really respected that family doctor more or much more than they respected their postman. There was a place for everybody, and they're really, my perception of it, there wasn't this massive inequality financially. The family doctor might have had a slightly better house, but it wasn't like it is now. This is really gone. Beyond men and women, it's this respect for just, and you can't make people respect. It's just something that's in there where you actually, respect this person's a soldier, this person's this person's that. And, why we don't have that in our culture now? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but speaking of this diversity thing, well, we have these big groups of people who, they don't want to be part of this. If they can't be a, and I see this sometimes with kids, if they can't be a, I want to be like a rock star, or I want to be this, because all this media blitz. But if they can't do that, then they don't want to do nothing. And, so we just keep growing this welfare class, and nobody's going to respect that. That young woman she was a Domino's pizza worker. That's what she was doing to make some money.
That fits in with what I was going to say. The basic problem is the alien cultures clashing and this immigration of different, of third world and making it, even the Negroes who were slaves, making them equal citizens and so on. Now, it sounded fair and right and everything, but now we can see after all these years that they've had the chance to do, to make it work. It doesn't work. It will never work. And so the reason that the Third Reich worked was because it was homogeneous Germans. You have to start with that. But then even in that, people say, well, women don't want to, have to stay home. Well, they do. Most women do want to be, are happy as homemakers. Most women don't have super high IQs. Most women are not aching to, go and have some big shot career, unless they're silly, silly girls who are bombarded by this celebrity culture. And as you say, they want to be rock stars, or they imagine they might marry somebody to put him in a mansion or some nonsense. But, without all that stuff, just normal life. I'm getting excited here. But, most women are of average and, slightly higher and higher. And most of these women, if it's presented right, why wouldn't they be happy to be homemakers? It's a great life if you've got a good husband. And, I had the fortune of growing up with a mother who was a homemaker. And actually, I even then thought, well, that's kind of boring to call her. They use the word housewife. And I thought I didn't want to be a housewife because that sounds terrible. You're a wife to your house or something. But my mother had a nice life, and it was certainly good for me and my siblings. And I knew just a couple of girls, friends whose mothers worked. One from grade school that was right across the street from me that I experienced from that point, from kindergarten on. They moved there, and she found a job as a kindergarten teacher and at a Lutheran school. And she was always there all way through high school that I knew this girl. And then another girl I knew in high school who I went and visited her. And their homes were just not organized like ours. They were disorganized. There was a lot of chaos going on, and the kids had to do a lot of things, and they were more on their own, like so many kids are today, you know, where you have to go find something to eat or whatever, and nobody's around.
Oh, the kids, happening with the kids.
Yeah. And, you know, we had a family dinner together every night, and so did a whole lot of people. I mean, we all sat down together every night. I mean, there was no question about that. It was such a nice time. If we had our own white societies, we would get back to that, and the women would basically be happy.
But well, I think so too. I think, like I said, though, I think we could. We're creative people, and there's many different ways that things can be done, and that things can be tried. But we have to be amongst ourselves to do it. We can't have alien groups who hate us in their, you know, inflicting their BS on us. But left to our own devices, I think that, you know, that there's many different possibilities for things. But I agree with you. I think that, you know, just like most men, most women would just want to live the norm. And, you know, but I guess for me, the only thing I'm saying, and I know that you agree with this, is those who don't want to, or those with high IQs that want to do more, you know, I would never want to go back to being forced to, you know, to do something that I didn't want to do.
Exactly. That brings us to this article I was going to bring up. I sent you one, but this is a different one. That I think I might have mentioned it to you yesterday, but it was just an email exchange that I was I wasn't a part of it, but I was reading it. And a good fellow, James Sanchez, who does a lot of good work and always comes up with keeps a whole lot of ideas floating around. This one just came up. I'll just get to the, you know, about IQ and educational accomplishment among women and how many children they have. And it brings up Sunni Muslim women. And then it says the problem of educated women is not wanting, the problem of educated women not wanting children is a global one. That in Singapore, which is a really well-run country, I have to say, in Singapore, women with an advanced degree, like yourself, are paid a lot of money to have children. And I commented here, I think that's a very good idea. It's similar to what they were doing in the Third Reich. You know, they were encouraging certain people, males and females or males particularly with high IQs to find a good wife with good, you know, good stock and so on. You know, it was more important than her IQ, but still, you know, to marry and start families. And stick together and raise these families that for the good of the nation. And they say that this program in Singapore it's open to all. There's three ethnic groups there mainly, and it's open to all of them. But it largely affects Chinese women who have the highest IQs. And then it mentions that Catholic women with some education, like high school, and they had literacy. They were literate. Had fertility rates similar to the Sunni Arab women, means very high. These Sunni Arab women who had no education, like no school at all, no literacy. But it says even so, in recent years, Sunni Arab women have had declining fertility without much education. So, you know, as you were saying, how everything came through you through osmosis, even though you weren't watching TV and so on. this is how it happens. I mean, the culture is changing everywhere, and women are rebelling against some of the more restrictive ways of life that they're forced into because they're just aware of what's going on all around the world. So I think that it's, the point is not to stop women from pursuing an education and being intelligent being able to accomplish a lot for their people, which women can do and have done and will continue to do. But to just encourage one lifestyle to not to preclude another. That even women yes. who go to school and have professions and so on can have children, and they can have them when they're young. They can hold off if they on some of these
things
for a little while. Yeah,
there's so many ways
they're guaranteed that they won't lose out. Yeah,
but see, what we're doing is we're feeding the bottom feeders is what we're doing,
and
we have been doing for decades. We're feeding the absolute bottom, so that everywhere I look, where I live, I don't see just two kids following the illegal alien around. She's pregnant, she's got a baby carriage, and there's like five of them. I see it all the time, all over the place, and who's paying for it? You and me. We're paying for it.
They're out there. I see them in the supermarket.
And
there's a lot of them what they call Hispanics, these mestizos where I live. And, they don't bother anybody, but they're there. And you can't help but be a little envious because they've got three, maybe four children and a baby. Or if their husband is with them, then they're carrying the baby too. And sometimes, as you said yesterday, they're also pregnant. So there would be three, four, five there you can count, just children.
But they wouldn't have three, four, five.
And they're filling their grocery cart, and without any problem. So I just figure every time, they've got all kinds of food assistance, in order to do that.
That's right. And so,
when you have children and they don't care what race the children are, when you have children, you get all this special treatment from our government, but which is fine, but we want that to be done in a homogeneous country.
If you're a bottom feeder, you do.
Yeah, right.
Bottom feeder, you get all kinds of assistance. I mean, we've just got this, again, this Orwellian eugenics program that's been going on, where truly just the bottom layer is being fed the most. Instead of the opposite. And so, again, this could easily be fixed because there's all kinds of ways it can be done, and especially people with high IQs. You can figure out and create all kinds of ways. I mean, the kids need to be raised, though. But it doesn't have to be like in the 50s either. And there are men out there that would really like to be more involved with the child rearing and aren't exactly thrilled about having to do the 8 to 6 every day, especially the slave labor that exists now just working for the corporation. They're not thrilled at doing this, and maybe they would like a shot at it too. And I just think that there's various and sundry ways that it can be done, but the society has to be homogeneous because without it, we see what happens. We see we get this bottom layer. We get these people who they don't want to get with the program because their program is just give me something. Just give me more. Just give me something. You owe me. And there are white people that have that attitude now, sadly. But I think they're in the minority. I think for most white people, they don't just think, what are you going to give me? And I get this all the time, even in my practice. It's just really funny. And now that my eyes are open to it, the phone calls that I get, I've Carolyn, I never hear from a white person who expects me to do free work for them. But on a daily basis, I get phone calls from Black and brown people, basically thinking I just work for free. How can you help me? I get it all the time. And we have taught them, though, not you and I personally. I personally would have never done this because it's not good for anybody to just be plopped on the earth thinking, just like baby birds with their mouths open. Just let the food fly in. I don't have to do anything for it. We're not doing them any favors either, but our government has created this mess. It's huge, And these people aren't going to stop this by themselves. We have to stop it.
Even in a National Socialist government, I mean, they were very clear about shirkers in Germany, because there are those people. Don't think that our race doesn't have plenty of those people. And if you know, there should only be so much of a safety net. If you have a total safety net for people, unless they're really great people, I guess, like the Scandinavians or something, they seem to have done all right, even with a big fat safety net. But, you know, that the bigger the safety net, the more likely if you just fail and you're not going to feel it that much, the path of least resistance is what most people take. Unless you're somebody, and I can say I'm one of these people that has big ideas, that wants to accomplish something, that can't be satisfied unless I do something that I feel good about, that I really care about, and I always had that quality, but that doesn't mean most people do. And so if they don't have to do anything, the likely path of least resistance is that they won't do it. So you have to be careful of that no matter what. But here is this article I sent you about African American women. Just take a second here. They had this seminar or something. Women, Journal of Women in Social Work, and this woman who spoke there, I think she must be black. Her name is Valerie Borum, but she's associate or assistant professor at Jane Addams College of Social Work, University of Illinois in Chicago. But it was all about perceptions of depression and suicide risk and protection among 40 African American women. So they had these focus groups, and they talked all, and these women all talked and everything. And what they came up with was that living in spirit as well as in community with others was viewed as protection against suicide. And having a strong sense of African-American heritage, history, and identity was perceived as protection against suicide and depression. Well, don't we know that? And don't we need to have a strong sense of white heritage and white American heritage, history, and identity for ourselves? I mean, you know, we're the ones that we're supposed to help these people have this. And if they don't have it yet, you know, well, you got to give them more help and more help until they're just happy as can be. But this is what we need to think about for ourselves. It applies, you know, a sense of identity is very, very important. Sense of your. Well,
yeah,
and
not only that, to have it be the opposite now, where actually our kids are being taught that white people are oppressors, that we did nothing good. I mean, get the hell out of here. White people created Western civilization. That's it. Nobody else did. You know, and I just love this. It's kind of like, you know, just bite the hand that feeds you. Just you know, anyway. On that note, a book I'm reading right now, and it's massive, but I highly recommend it to people. And also, if for people that are homeschooling, it might be something that you could restructure a bit for your kids. It's called March of the Titans. It's a huge
book.
Book. It's by Arthur
Kemp.
Thank you. Yes, wonderful. And it got wonderful photographs in it. And I mean, if that doesn't stir up some pride, of course, there's a lot of stuff about wars in there. But I mean, it's pretty amazing book. I actually wrote to the author and I told him that I get up a half hour earlier every day so that I can read that with my coffee in the morning. But anyway, that's, you know, there's something that you can read to, you know, latch on to some white identity and something about our ancestors. And I also want to say that I'm really loving Tan's series on this. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, all these little groups and their depression. Well, let's talk about depression and anxiety. This is something white people have in spades. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, that's research based what I'm saying here. But all these other groups get to talk about it and feel sorry for themselves and think about ways to help themselves. But boy, not white people. We don't get to say, wow, geez, there's just the escalation in depression and anxiety amongst whites. And actually, anxiety is an interesting topic in itself, because there's a reverse correlation between anxiety and violence. So guess which groups don't have a lot of anxiety? I think you can guess. But anyway.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, yeah, when you're trying to act right and do right and be right, you're going to have more anxiety, aren't you?
I think it also correlates with intelligence. There's all kinds of interesting things. I mean, you know, that anxiety actually does correlate with intelligence. So that I think that you see, I think a lot of white people tend to be kind of nervous. And that's why we have real good inhibition. I mean, we're not just going to go, oh, wow, I don't want to pay for my pizza, but so I think I'll just stab you to death.
Oh, God. Oh, that's funny, but it's terrible.
I know.
It's just amazing.
It boggles my mind. It truly boggles my mind. And it doesn't make it onto the news.
Well, it did. Somebody wrote on that video that that may have, and maybe you wrote it, I don't know, that it may have been associated with a gang, you know, where they have these gang initiations where they have to go out and kill a white person.
Yeah, that was on the video.
But it's kind of funny that young boy was there, so it wasn't just like a couple of girls doing it. It was a girl and a younger boy.
There's another thing, too, is that there's so many black women who are involved with violent crime. But you and I, Carolyn, are part of a group that commits nearly no crime, yet we're paying the taxes for all this. I mean, white men, too, but we, white women, and you can also put Asian women in there, we commit no crime. We're like saints, you know, but we're the ones that are being raped. White women are the ones that are being raped.
We're harmless and we're not much in the habit of protecting ourselves. So I guess we're easy prey. We're vulnerable and easy to get at. Well, some of these women just make themselves, some of these stories I've read, and it really is a shame that these white women are too friendly with blacks and colored people. And then they come home at night into apartment buildings and go up the elevator, and there's a black man in there with them, and they don't immediately open the door and run out of there. I wouldn't, you know, you shouldn't get in an elevator with a single black man and nobody else in there. But you learn those things too late. They're full of all this trust and all this egalitarianism.
They're not told. About. I mean, they're told the exact opposite. So
sure. They're brainwashed. No, it's not a fault of theirs. Inherent, it's not that they're some kind of whores or something. It's that they feel guilty if they were to be suspicious of this person because he's of a different race. But we better get over that. That's all. We're out of time. Marina, I want to thank you so much, Marina Orwell, ladies and gentlemen. Look for her videos. I'll post the links to some of them, and we'll talk to her again. Thanks a lot. Marina, for being
thank you, Carolyn, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a lot of fun. So, but we leave you with this message. Don't get over that trusting people who are not people that you know and of your own type. So
I love your people.
Love your people. Yeah, that's right. So I think we made some good points here. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about white women. That's something that's under talked about. And we did a pretty good job of it today. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.